Okay, so Sariputra goes on, though, and says, it's very beautiful, isn't it? He says, where is it? In her we can find shelter. Most excellent are her works. She makes us seek the safety of the wings of enlightenment. And Kaizen, she brings light to the blind. She brings light so that all fear and distress may be forsaken. So she makes us seek the shelter of the wings of enlightenment. So, in other words, there is something in an encounter with Prajnaparamita which would even push us into seeking refuge in the Dharma. There's something in an encounter with wisdom, with the perfection of wisdom, or that figure, that makes us practice a sort of, I was looking at my notes this afternoon, I was thinking about it in terms of a sort of felt pressure. And I think it's the kind of thing that we touched on this afternoon when we're just trying to, you know, just trying to kind of figure out our own associations with words like wisdom, compassion, emptiness. You know, that sort of felt pressure when you, you know, we touched on it when we talked about futility, sort of futility of realizing you know, there's suffering exists and it's so much of it. There's a futility in trying to do something about that. There's a futility in trying to mend samsara on its own terms, as it were. It's futile. So that kind of experience can be a kind of felt like there's a pressure away, isn't it? There's a pressure there that we're not comfortable any longer in that situation. We're not comfortable doing nothing, but we also don't know what you can do, or if even anything can be done. So there's a pressure that's in it. We talked about it in terms of tension this afternoon, but I was thinking about it earlier in terms of this, a sort of felt pressure. But when you come into contact with the Dharma, with something that some aspect or a meditation, particular meditation that we do, say, or a particular walk that we do after we've meditated, or a particular conversation with someone who just kind of lifts the veil a little bit, that results in a felt pressure in us to seek something better. And as it says, Sariputra has this lovely phrase, isn't it? Seek the shelter. If her we can find shelter, she makes us seek the safety of the wings of enlightenment. And I think that felt pressure, it can feel to come from outside of us. So maybe that's when we're more in contact with the suffering that's there in the world. But it can also be felt from within us, I think, as well. So it can, you know, it can be either way. There can be something in us that's just not satisfied and wants to make it different. Or it can be in contact with things outside of us that create a pressure from without. So it would seem to me to be good to look for that sense of felt pressure. And when you come across it, try not to push away from it. Just try to let it be, and even try to let it grow. Although since it's uncomfortable, that's not an easy thing to do and would require some faith in one's practice and in the Dharma. But yeah, just try and kind of look out for something akin to that, because I think from, you know, just reflecting on what's in the hymn, that would seem to be part of an encounter with the perfection of wisdom. So she makes us seek the refuge of the wings of enlightenment. So another kind of thing that came to my mind again was, in response to that, was our three verses from the Dhammapada. So this is Bhante's translation, which I particularly like for these three. So I'll just read them out. All conditioned things are impermanent. When one sees this with insight, that's a translation of prajna, when one sees this with insight, one becomes weary of suffering. This is the way to purity. And the second one, all conditioned things are painful. When one sees this with insight, one becomes weary of suffering. This is the way to purity. And then the third one, all things whatsoever are devoid of unchanging selfhood. When one sees this with insight, one becomes weary of suffering. This is the way to purity. So that's a very distilled version of the Buddha's fundamental experience. And it's another way of stating what the perfection of wisdom is. The perfection of wisdom as a phrase, you know, came into being at a much later stage than the Dhammapada was written down. It's much later. It's a later usage. But this hymn's about the perfection of wisdom, and those three verses are the perfection of wisdom, but earlier phrases. They're, I think you could say they're the sort of root verses, perhaps, from the very earliest layer of the Buddha's own teaching about the essence of wisdom. So there's good just to bear in mind. They might be good just to kind of find in here. It's the chapter called The Way. I think it's chapter 20. Just find them. Maybe just write them out for yourself. Reflect on them. You could have them in front of you as you meditate, because they are the root verses from that very, very early layer of the teaching. So in those verses, we have this phrase, we grow weary of suffering. When you see when you see that things are impermanent, they bring about often suffering and are insubstantial, devoid of selfhood, then the next thing that's said is when you see that with insight, so see it in a way that we can sustain it and really, you know, let it into our heart, we grow weary of suffering. So I'm always very struck by that phrase. Actually, that's why that translation is one of my favourite ones at that point, because some of the other translations don't have that, or they express it in a different way. So we grow weary of suffering. We desire, at that point, we want something different. We want an alternative, desiring an alternative. Experiencing unsatisfactoriness deeply enough, and then we desire an alternative. And this word, growing weary of suffering, is the word that's been translated is nibbandhiti, and it's a form of the word nibbida, which, if you do remember, if you have ever learnt the 12 positive nidanas in Sanskrit or Pali, you'll know that. However, you've probably forgotten it, like me. It means it's one of the experiences that happen after stream entry. So after seeing things as they really are, there are some experiences that culminate in freedom and knowing that you're free. But before that, there are phases that you go through that are translated with words like withdrawal or dispassion or disentanglement, and that's all associated with this word nibbida. Dispassion, disentanglement. And it's the same word that Bhante is translating as you grow weary with suffering. And then the response is, you want to disentangle yourself. And on the basis of really having seen the cause of suffering, then of course you can disentangle yourself. We often can't, because it's not on that basis of insight. But when it is on the basis of insight, then you've experienced unsatisfactoriness deeply, beyond the painful, pleasant level of experience, under that, able to see that the very fabric of existence has a deep level of unsatisfactoriness to it. Unsatisfactoriness, that is, if we're always trying to find the ground, the steady ground to stand on, in the way that we were talking about this afternoon. And as part of that, of course, what often happens is we grow weary with what may once have provided meaning in our life. And at that point, we need something different. And that's a very good position to be in. That's a very potentially fruitful position to be in, but it's not an easy one. it's a very could be a bit of a scary kind of position to be in. So it's a good one, but and probably only happens because we've already put some effort in to practice. But it's not an easy place to stand when we're weary and have certain we've seen through what worked for us before, but not yet really been able to kind of step into with confidence into the alternative. But we're seeking the alternative. I suppose that's what the phrase is about. She makes us seek the shelter of the wings of enlightenment. And the wings of enlightenment itself, such a lovely image, isn't it? I mean, maybe it brings to mind the image of a bird flying, perhaps. You know, flying freely through the sky without hindrance. It's interesting when you sit here at Tarloka meditating in the shrine room, so often there's birdsong going on outside. You know, so even just kind of hearing kind of birdsong, sometimes you get, especially when the skylarks are singing, you get, this sort of single pure thread of sound that just wafts its way up into the air. And, you know, it can lift your heart. It's so beautiful and pure. It's still this kind of purity to it. So maybe that image kind of, you know, can it's one that's worth kind of thinking about, and it's just let it kind of touch you, just kind of let it touch you and see what emerges. So the wings of enlightenment are also a traditional Buddhist image, and they're conjure up freedom. And that's the kind of connotation of it. Or if you like, leaving the ground of the ordinary mind. So the ordinary mind doesn't really want to leave the ground, like we were saying today. We really want the ground to stand on, and we want it to be very firm and reliable and unmoving and absolutely kind of safe, and it's not. So this, the mind that seeks the shelter of the wings of enlightenment, actually isn't looking for that ground any longer. Actually, it's trying to leave the ground. Actually, it's trying to take flight, shake off delusion, sort of shake off that delusion that there can be that kind of safe place to stand. So it has all these associations with it as a phrase, the wings of enlightenment. And Dad Pachney, how is your mind? What is your name translate as?
Kind. Winged
compassion, yes, because I knew it was the wings of enlightenment is the sort of Pachney bit of your name. So, you know, winged compassion or wings of compassion, lovely. It's lovely, isn't it? And there's Bodhipaksha in the order as well, and that is the translation of the wings of enlightenment. That translates as that. So it's a lovely image. It's a very lovely name. There's an actual list of 37 practices that are traditionally kind of make up the wings of enlightenment. They're 37 Bodhipakshas, they're called. And they're the 37 actual practices that enable us to start this process of just kind of shaking off delusion and, you know, managing to take flight to some extent. So, I was trying to remember what they were this afternoon. I'm afraid I haven't got the length of going and looking them up. But you have to add things up. So, for example, there's the Eightfold Noble Path. So that's eight of the 37. And then there's the seven Bodhyangas. So that's 15. And then there's the five spiritual faculties and the five powers. So that's another 10. So that gets up to 25. It's a bit of a Dharma Sudoku. Only if you think it's difficult doing Sudokus with 9, try doing them with 37. I couldn't remember what the other 12 were. Except I think 4 of them are the 4 foundations of mindfulness. So maybe me and maybe some of you could go and look it up in the meantime. But it's a list of basic Dharma practices that then get put together and under this lovely kind of name.